Recently, I met with members of a community-led Vipassana group who wanted to start a Dharma school for the children. And they wanted some advice on the curriculum. They said they already had the first part of the curriculum set out, which was to teach the kids the three characteristics. After all, this is the Buddhist basic teaching about reality. And they wanted to start the kids with basic facts. I told them that would be a very bad place to start. Or teach the kids to be depressed and lazy because it doesn't come in context. It would be better to start with the question the Buddha said lies at the beginning of wisdom, which is what when I do it will lead to my long-term welfare and happiness. What when I do it will lead to my long-term harm and suffering. In the context of that question, then you can teach generosity, virtue, meditation on goodwill, any of the perfections. Unfortunately, they seemed inclined to want to adopt my suggestions. You can't blame them for thinking that the Buddha's basic teaching was the three characteristics. This is what the commentaries have said for a long time. It influenced a lot of Theravada practice. But the Buddha himself never said that. For one, he said his basic teaching was suffering and the end of suffering. Expanded in the Four Noble Truths. As for the three characteristics, he never called them characteristics. Inconstancy, stress, not self. He said we're perceptions. And it's good to think about why that makes an important difference. If you're talking about characteristics of things out there, your basic interest is in the nature of reality out there. But here the Buddha is talking about one particular problem, the problem of suffering. What you do to create suffering, what you can do to put an end to suffering. When you think of the three perceptions as perceptions, you realize that these are things you do. A perception is something you fabricate. You have a purpose in doing it, and the question is, what is the purpose? So by calling these things perceptions, the Buddha is asking you to notice what you're doing, reflect on it, and see what the consequences are. This falls into that pattern that he says nourishes the Dharma, which is that you commit to a practice, commit to doing something, and then reflect. So you reflect on why. What's the purpose of these perceptions? What's your purpose in these perceptions? How do they fit into the things you're doing that are causing suffering? How do they fit into the factors of the path? This is particularly important when you realize that the Buddha also said perceptions are not just actions, fabrications. He also said they're like mirages. The mirage can be totally distorting, or sometimes it can give you a true but partial view of something beyond the horizon. Of course, the Buddha teaches these three perceptions as at least partially true, but he does admit that they are partial. Your perceptions don't tell you everything about the five aggregates. After all, the Buddha said if the aggregates didn't have their pleasant side, we wouldn't fall for them. So not totally stressful. And if they were totally out of your control, you couldn't use them to make a path. But that's exactly what you do. You have to use them to make a path. As in the practice of concentration. As John Lee points out, we're taking things that are said to be inconstant, stressful, not self. We're trying to make them more constant. You're trying to make your breath more constant. You don't want to chop the in-breath away from the out-breath. You try to see the in-breath flowing into the out-breath and the out-breath flowing into the in-breath to give yourself a good constant place to stay so that it can be pleasant. And you're trying to get the mind under control so that you can do this. This is why the Buddha says there are times when you want to have a perception of self as competent, as someone who can do this, as someone who will benefit from doing it, someone who can watch what you're doing, see the results, and make suggestions. The self as producer, the self as consumer, the self as observer, the self as commentator and judge. You need this because you have to do the concentration. It's not going to do itself. At that point in the practice, you apply the perception of not-self only to things that are going to pull you away. The pleasures that come from the distractions, the hindrances. You want to see them as inconstant, stressful, not-self. In other words, not worth it. Because when you do something, the question always is it worth it? That the perception of self is something you do, the perception of not-self is something you do, along with all the other perceptions here. And so at that point in the path, it's really worth it to do the concentration, because you can't see the mind clearly, and you can't see the aggregates clearly until the mind has gotten into good concentration. This is what I said. What does a concentrated mind see? It sees such as form, such as feeling, etc., down to the aggregates, such as their origin and such as their transcending. You've got to get the mind concentrated to do this properly. And the way you're going to see the aggregates, we're going to see them in the concentration. You've got the form of the breath here, the form of the body. You've got the feeling of pleasure you're trying to create. You've got the perception that holds the mind with the breath. That has a picture that gives you an idea of what the breath can do, what it is doing. Fabrications, your intention to stay here, plus in the beginning the directed thought and evaluation that hold you here, that adjust things so the breath feels good and the mind feels right. They fit together. And then consciousness, which is aware of all these things. As the Buddha said, when you finally master concentration, then it's time to start analyzing it in these terms. This is when it becomes right to use the perceptions of not-self and constantly stress for the purpose of developing dispassion. Why do you want dispassion? Because of the Four Noble Truths. The duty with regard to suffering is to develop dispassion for it through comprehending it. The duty with regard to the cause of suffering is to abandon it through dispassion. The Third Noble Truth is dispassion itself. And the Fourth Noble Truth, even though you have to exercise passion in order to construct it, does reach a point where you begin to reflect on it and realize that it too is inconstant. It can't be the goal. It too is stressful. It too is not self. You're trying to come to that value judgment at that point in the path. Why? Because you've heard of that Third Noble Truth. Without the Third Noble Truth, that there is a cessation of suffering, you'll just say, well, this is as good as it gets, I'm going to hold on to it. But the Buddha wants you to let go completely. To the point where you even let go of the path, even let go of these perceptions of not-self, etc. He wants to make sure that you let go totally. This deals with another common misconception about the teaching on not-self, which is that it applies only to a permanent self. Well, that would mean that people who didn't believe in a permanent self would not be clinging to themselves, to their ideas of self. But often when you think that yourself is impermanent, it depends on certain conditions being a certain way, you're going to really cling, try to make those conditions the way you want them to be. Now the Buddha's trying to get you to let go of all notions of self. And finally, all the teachings that would have you let go, you let go of those too. We're not here to arrive at a clear view of what reality is. We're concerned with reality only insofar as it helps us understand the problem, which is the clinging that is suffering. What we can do to put an end to that clinging. your views about reality, no matter how accurate they are things that you can cling to. So by focusing on the fact that these views are perceptions, helps get you some distance from them, realizing that these are things you have to commit yourself to for the time being, and then reflect on them to see how far they can take you. And when they can't take you any further and you've got to let them go, you let them go. The Buddha's understanding of the path is all around, which is why commitment has to be paired with reflection. Look back on your actions. Learn from them. This principle starts from the very beginning. You're going to teach kids about what, when they do it, will lead to long-term welfare and happiness. You give them some basic principles, but you also have to teach them how to look in the areas where the principles are not clear, or you wonder if they really apply. You have to look at what you're doing, where you're causing harm, what you can do to stop causing harm. That principle starts at the very beginning. It's why he taught his son that principle. But it goes all the way through to the very end. Commit, reflect. Let go of anything unskillful. So we see the three perceptions as perceptions. That allows us to treat them in that way. So we get the most use out of them, but we don't burden ourselves with them. We use them when it's necessary. We let them go when it's not. The image they use in the forest tradition is being a carpenter, making a table or a chair. You have tools. You pick them up as you need them. You don't carry them around all the time. You have them at hand. And then when the chair or the table is done, you let them go. You put them down. And then you can enjoy the table and the chair as you like. So the Buddha's concerned for us that we not cling to anything unnecessary. We cling only to things that are helpful, when they are helpful, and let them go when we don't need them anymore. That's how we put an end to suffering. And that's how these three perceptions, seeing them as perceptions, can help in that direction.